It's the confluence where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. The bane of any reporter or editor is a slow news day. But that might never be a concern if you cover the White House. Jim Acosta is the chief White House correspondent for CNN. I spoke with him this week ahead of a trip to Pittsburgh, February 6th. Jim, thanks for taking the time.
Hey, great to be here. Thanks for having me.
You've covered the Obama White House and now the Trump White House. What's been the biggest difference between the two?
Well, I hate to say it, but I think you hit the nail right on the head at the very beginning of this, and that is there is never a dull moment covering Donald Trump's White House. And that's not to say that there were dull moments covering Barack Obama, but it's almost like a fire hose pointed right in our faces covering President Trump on a daily basis. For example, we're right in the middle of his impeachment trial. And so it never really slows down. The frenetic pace never really stops.
Has that extended your workday, sort of always being on call? Because Mr. Trump is very often tweeting late at night, early in the morning.
Yeah, and that is a huge difference from the Trump presidency and Barack Obama's presidency. I mean, I will tell you, when Barack Obama was in the White House, we weren't waiting by our phones at every waking moment to see what Barack Obama was tweeting. But with Donald Trump, obviously, it's a different world. And we have to stay on our toes, which means a lot of long days. You know, I get up in the morning. The first thing I do when I wake up is look at my phone and see if he's tweeted. And, you know, we're reporting on what's happening with the Trump White House until basically I go to bed at night, you know, 10, 11, midnight on some nights. And if we're overseas, the days are even longer.
Is it fair to say that you've had some exchanges with Trump when the president does meet with the White House press corps? And have those exchanges gotten a little more heated, maybe testy, as the impeachment process moves forward?
You know, I think they have. I think that's to be expected. I mean, you know, an impeachment is obviously going to get under any president's skin. And, you know, just the other day, I was in the Oval Office with the president and was asking him about Lev Parnas, this associate of Rudy Giuliani, who's been indicted, who's made all sorts of claims in the media. One of the claims that he's made is that the president's phone call with the leader of Ukraine and these other activities with the Ukrainians with respect to Joe Biden and getting dirt on Joe Biden were all about 2020, according to Lev Parnas. And so I asked the president about that and was pressing him on that subject. And at one point, he finally stopped and said, quiet to me. So he had had enough of those questions in that line of questioning. But, you know, listen, when you're in this line of work, when you're dealing with a president like Donald Trump, and it gets to be contentious at times, you sort of have to put your chin strap on, put your head down, and keep charging and keep plugging away and asking those questions.
So how do you decide when it's worth to keep pushing?
You know, I think that's a very good question. And one of the things that came up in the Oval Office at the White House the other day when he told me to be quiet was, you know, we heard the president going back to the same talking points. The impeachment is a hoax. The impeachment is a witch hunt and so on. And, you know, our job in the press, you know, in particular White House correspondent, is if you hear a president or any politician sort of going back to those talking points, recycling those talking points, I think that, you know, it's incumbent upon us on occasion, not every time, as respectfully and politely as we can, to try to interject and say, well, Mr. President, you know, Lev Parnas is saying that John Bolton knew about this and Mick Mulvaney knew about this. What about that, Mr. President? And so I think you have to do it as best as you can in those right moments. But, you know, you can't do it every time. You know, we can't go in there shouting questions at the president every time. Obviously, you have to have some sense of decorum. But I feel as though when we start to hear those talking points for the second or the third time, it's okay to jump in and try to ask another question. And so, you know, invariably, you'll see an exchange between me and the president or the president and other reporters, and you'll see that sort of dynamic play out.
I'm Kevin Gavin. We're talking to CNN Chief White House Correspondent Jim Acosta. Jim, what about exchanges with other journalists? You've been a reporter for 25 years. Have you ever experienced sort of the media infighting so common today?
Well, you know, one of the things that I think is a huge departure from where we were in the past, and I think we saw some of it during Barack Obama, but it's kind of been on steroids since Donald Trump came into office, is that there is a very, you know, big role that conservative media play in our daily conversation, in our daily lives in terms of the politics that we see play out in Washington. The president has some conservative news outlets that would essentially, toe the party line and amplify his message of the day, serve as almost propaganda outlets, as I have described them from time to time. That makes our lives a little more difficult as traditional White House reporters, because obviously if you have a president who has, a whole slew of media outlets out there that he'd rather talk to, he's not going to want to talk to us quite as much. And that makes it more of a challenge for us to get those questions to him, to do our jobs, talk to sources and so on. But what I have found is that there are sources, there are officials inside the administration who understand we have a job to do. And they talk to us because they too understand that the job of a free press and a democratic society like the United States has to be able to thrive, has to be able to do its job and get information as best as possible to the American people.
CNN Chief White House Correspondent Jim Acosta is our guest on The Confluence. He's joining us in advance of his appearance in Pittsburgh February 6th. Jim, do you feel like your profession is under fire?
Our profession is definitely under fire, Kevin. I'm glad you asked that question. And, the public needs to understand this has been going on for 3 years now. The president was inaugurated, sworn into office 3 years ago. And we saw, a lot of this during the campaign. He would call us the dishonest news media, the disgusting news media. He rolled that act into the Oval Office, started calling us fake news. And then not too long after that, people forget, he was referring to the press and the United States as the enemy of the people. What that has done is put a target on a lot of our backs. And I hate to put it in that kind of language, but that's essentially what's happened. I've received death threats for a while. During the first 3 years of this administration, I was receiving about a death threat a week. That was also the case for some of my other colleagues. I've been swatted. I've had people come up to me at rallies and say all sorts of things to me at the rallies. It is a high pressure environment, and it is a volatile environment. And my concern is, Kevin, is that one of these days, somebody who is a supporter of the president is going to, act out in ways that could hurt or kill a journalist. And the moment we have something like that happen in this country, we cease being the United States of America that you and I grew up in. And my message to folks, I wrote about it in a book, The Enemy of the People, we need people to slow down and think deeply about what's happening in the United States right now, whether or not this is the kind of environment we want to hand off the next generation. And my sense is Republican, Democrat, Independent, Liberal, Conservative, this is not the kind of country we want to hand off to our kids and grandkids, where the president calls people the enemy of the people and people are so fired up that they're threatening one another. I think we have to slow things down and think more deeply about the way we're engaging with one another.
You mentioned the book. Some critics have said that you sound, in the book, that you sound more like a commentator than a reporter. Should you have a role beyond reporting what you know and you've verified to be fact-based stories?
Well, I was heartened when the book came out that Sam Donaldson, the legendary White House correspondent for ABC, put out an op-ed saying Jim Acosta is doing it exactly right. There are times when, as seasoned journalists, we have to offer our perspectives, offer our observations. Listen, CNN would not let me go out there if I were to weigh in on the president's tax policy and say this is a good policy or this is a bad policy or his environmental policy. But I think it's okay for journalists, and I think it's the role of journalists these days to not only defend the truth, and we try to do that on a daily basis, but defend our profession, defend what we do on a regular basis. I'm very passionate about that. I talk about that a great deal during the book. I think it's very important to talk about. It's a conversation we need to have.
What's your assessment of the coming election cycle? Do you think that the 2020 election will be a single issue contest, and that issue being Donald Trump?
I think that is the case, because if you look at where things stand right now from our public opinion polls, not only at CNN, but the other major news outlets, he receives pretty high marks for his handling of the economy. And if you talk to folks out there, they believe the economy is doing very well. They see the country is on the right path. And yet CNN had a poll out just the other day saying that 51% of Americans would like to see the president removed from office. That is a huge disconnect. Typically, when a president is presiding over an economy doing this well, they are on a glide path to reelection. The reason why Donald Trump is not on a glide path to re-election is because of his own behavior, his own questionable behavior. The question is how the president responds. And, you know, I'm at the Davos Economic Forum that the president is visiting as you and I are speaking right now, and he was spending a lot of time talking about the economy. The president wants to talk about the economy. What's dominating the headlines back home in Washington and around the United States? The impeachment. And so he is sometimes his own worst enemy when it comes to what's in the news, because if, you know, and a lot of his own advisors will tell us this privately, if the president could just stay on message and stay off of his phone, stay off of Twitter, his presidency might be in a very different place right now.
As a reporter, but also as a consumer of news yourself, what do you listen for during election coverage?
What I listen to, what I'm listening for during election coverage is, you know, I'm a political junkie just like everybody else. I want to know how the president is doing or how politician is doing in certain key areas of a particular battleground map. If you're talking about a congressional race, there are certain portions of a district that you pay close attention to. When it comes to President Trump heading into the 2020 election, you're obviously going to want to know where Pennsylvania is right now, where Western Pennsylvania is right now, where Pittsburgh is right now, where Michigan is, where Wisconsin is. And if you look at the polls right now, people say, oh, well, the president's a shoo-in for re-election. He's doing so well. That is not necessarily the case. People forget he lost the popular vote by 3 million votes, won the Electoral College by a slim margin in three very key states, those blue wall states. And the question becomes, can he recapture those states? And I think right now he's got a big uphill climb. Is he going to be able to win Michigan again? That's going to be a tough challenge. Could he win Pennsylvania again? It's going to depend in large part on what happens in Western Pennsylvania, as you know. It's a key part of the election, and I watch it every 4 years, and I think it's very likely to come down to Western Pennsylvania and the Pittsburgh area when the ballots come in on, here in November 2020.
Jim Acosta is the chief White House correspondent for CNN. He's speaking in Pittsburgh February 6th as part of Point Park University's Media Innovators Speakers Series. Jim, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, Kevin. Really appreciate it.
I'm Kevin Gavin. You're listening to The Confluence on 90.5 WESA.
I'm Kylie Kaczynski, still ahead on The Confluence. Football fans and some non-football fans just interested in a little wager will be placing their bets leading up to Super Bowl 54. We'll take a look at how sports betting has grown over the last few years. Plus, the Lunar New Year kicks off this weekend. We'll hear about the Year of the Rat and how Pittsburghers will be celebrating. And just ahead, Pennsylvania is seeing the sinking effects on landscapes after longwall mining. Find conversations, stories, and more from this and past episodes of the show on our website at wesa.fm/confluence. The Confluence continues next on 90.5 WESA.
If Petula Clark was from Pittsburgh, I bet her hit single Downtown would have mentioned the Kaufman's Clock. Clark, however, was not from Pittsburgh, but Surrey, England, and she made music history on this day in 1965 when Downtown hit the top spot on the Billboard Hot 100. While the song is instantly recognizable and often thought to be an upbeat ode to city living, Clark said that she always thought the song had a bit of lonely desperation in it as well. The tune also took home the Grammy Award for Best Rock Song in 1965, making Clark the first Brit to win a Grammy. For 91.3 WYEP, I'm Joey Spehar.
Longwall mining. That's when all of the coal is taken from under an area a mile or two long. The ground above the mine can sink several feet and cause a lot of damage above ground. A new report looks at the impacts of mining in Pennsylvania. This is the Allegheny Front Environment Update. I'm Carol Holsapple. Act 54 is the 1994 amendment to the state's mining law. It deals with streams affected by mining and structural damage to buildings and homes above mined land. Act 54 also requires an assessment every 5 years of how the law is being implemented by the state's Department of Environmental Protection. I spoke to the most recent report's lead author, Daniel Bain, at his office at the University of Pittsburgh. He's an assistant professor of geology and environmental science there. This latest report looks at 2013 to 2018, and I asked Bain about the issues with data collection and software technology he describes in the report.
There's reluctance to allow electronic submissions because of questions of what's an actual record and what has been stamped by, you know, the mining engineer, the professional geologist. So
stamped on a piece of paper.
Yeah. So if you stamp a piece of paper, you know that's real. But if it's on a PDF, what if someone goes in and changes your portable document? So that's a problem, and that needs a workaround. But in terms of how much work is done at DEP, there are fewer employees now than there were. So a lot of, you know, people look to industry, and you see that if you modernize your information systems and you give people more tools to do the job, fewer people can do the job. But the problem that seems to have gone on is that we've allowed things to shrink in terms of the number of employees, but there's not been a concurrent modernization of the information management system. And it's no fault of the people that are doing the work. It's a Commonwealth level decision on how we're going to handle data and how we're going to build management systems for this data. The original data system to track these impacts is 25 years old. It's in a software that isn't made anymore. You have a lot of impediments to making changes that would make it easier.
So is there anything that stood out to you from this five-year report that we're talking about and the previous five-year report that are notable either in a good way or that are worrying to you?
One thing we did in this reporting period is we started talking about some emergent trends. In some cases, it seems to be, for whatever reason, economically viable for the mine operators to purchase outright a lot of land above these longwall operations. And, you know, it's not a problem in and of itself, but if those things become, you know, state game lands or they're taken out of production for agriculture or pasturing, in the long term, I'm not sure that we quite understand how it's going to impact the community. You know, when I've lived in rural areas, the closest neighbor is your best neighbor. And if there's an incentive to leave some of these areas, your best neighbor might be gone. So, I mean, I think that these overarching land use changes are not being considered carefully enough.
Daniel Bain is an assistant professor of geology and environmental science at Pitt and the lead author of the fifth report on the impacts of underground coal mining in Pennsylvania. A spokesperson for DEP says the department is looking at the best available technology to accept data electronically from the next report and is working towards modernizing record keeping. There's more at AlleghenyFront.org. That's the Allegheny Front Environment Update. I'm Carol Holsapple.
It's the Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. Kansas City and San Francisco will square off February 2nd for Super Bowl 54. The Chiefs are looking for their first title in 50 years, and a victory for the 49ers would mean a sixth Lombardi Trophy, matching the Steelers and New England atop the NFL. Johnny Avello is the head of DraftKings Sportsbook Operations. He's been in the gaming industry for 40 years. He joins us on the line from Las Vegas. Johnny, welcome.
Thank you very much, Kevin. Pleasure to be on.
Kansas City opened as a slight favorite, according to odds makers. Both Kansas City and San Francisco, they put on impressive shows in winning their conferences in different ways. Chiefs and their amazing quarterback, Patrick Mahomes. 49ers running the ball right through Green Bay. But Kansas City opened as a very slight favorite. Why so?
Well, for each team, we odds makers have what they call power ratings. And just to break it down, and not spend a lot of time on it, it's based on your offensive and defensive production and other factors that go into it that make it quite complicated. But on those ratings, these two teams came out really close to being equal, with Kansas City having just a slight edge, maybe about a half a point. And we do not open up games half points, could be 1.5, but not 1.5 exactly. And so we opened up Kansas City a 1-point favorite, currently at 1.5. There's been a little money early on the Chiefs.
How does this small spread, this small margin, compare to other Super Bowls, say in the last 5 years or so?
There's been a few small numbers. This one is rather small. Usually it's around the 2.5 point range, sometimes 3. The one concern I always have about the short number is that the money line, sometimes you can't even use one if it stays at a pick'em. So I'm hopeful that the spread will stay around that 1 or 1.5 area.
Once we knew the contenders, the point total, your projection of what both teams will score combined, it started at 53. It's already slightly higher. Does that over-under seem right to you?
It does. My projection for the game was that each team would score around 26.5 points. So the total is exactly where it needs to be. Now, with that being said, there are some key numbers out there that happen more than others. 51, 53, 54, they're all fairly key numbers. If you go back and look at games that had these type of teams, offensive-minded teams, you'd see that those numbers have fallen from time to time. So I think it's right where it needs to be.
It kind of surprised me a little bit. Because Kansas City averaged 43 points a game in their two playoff games, and San Francisco averaged 32 points a game.
That's true, Kevin, but if you look at the competition that Kansas City played in their two games versus the 49ers, I think the competition was probably a bit inferior. And also, the teams they played weren't known for really stellar defenses. this one they're going up against is one of the better defenses in the NFL.
Right, right. To remind those unfamiliar, if bookmakers increase that total point, that doesn't mean that all of a sudden you think the teams are going to score more. It's a reflection of how the bets are coming in so far. Is that correct?
That's correct. One thing you should know about bookmakers. Bookmakers aren't necessarily good at predicting the winners of the games. Bookmakers are good at setting the odds for the game and trying to establish some sort of equal balance as far as money bet on both sides.
In addition to the point spread and the total points scored, what do you think are some of the wildest so-called prop bets?
Well, we're going to have a bunch of them because you'll not only be able to bet the game at the current spread, you'll be able to bet spreads like Kansas City -7 and everything leading up to that and exceeding that. So, and you asked what other bets we're going to have that are kind of different. So we follow what the gaming authorities will allow us to do.
Mm-hmm. We're talking to DraftKings' Johnny Avello about his projections ahead of Super Bowl 54. So how is DraftKings working in states that are still relatively new to legal sports betting?
One thing we're doing in Pennsylvania, we're doing this before the Super Bowl starts, which is one of the greatest promotions that I've ever seen. It started on January 16th and it goes to January 27th. And so for the amount you wager, we're giving you back 5% in free bets. And what's great about this promotion is, of course, everyone's guaranteed to get at least 5% of the amount they wager. But the state, as you know, in a state collaboration of bets helps everyone in the state get more percentage back. So we have a chart, and when we get up to $20 million of state wagers during that time, everybody's going to get 10% back in free bets.
Is the Super Bowl unique in that millions of people from all stripes are watching, and maybe they're more open to the idea of putting a little money on the game as opposed to maybe the weekly bettors?
Usually everyone tries to have a little something on this game. It's an event, first of all. It goes over the course of about 4 hours. Everyone's watching it that day. And, you know, why not have a little something on the game, whether it be on the side or your favorite good-looking quarterback, Jimmy Garoppolo, to throw, you know, 1.5 touchdown passes. So this game does draw new bettors, maybe first-time bettors also, because the impact that this game actually has on our country.
Do you have a sense yet just how big the sports book is going to be nationwide this year? How much total is going to be wagered? What would you think?
I don't know. I can tell you this, that in Nevada, Where I'm from and been here for 40 years and ran the Wynn Sportsbook for 13 before I came on board with DraftKings, our state numbers were the highest we ever handled on the game was 2 years ago, was around $158 million. So, you know, you can, that's one state only. When you think about, you know, the all the other states that are going to be on board this year, hard to say what that number is going to be, but it's going to be, I think it's going to kind of be mind-boggling just for the amount of states we have now. And next year, probably add another 10 states or so, which, we're just getting started here right now, Kevin.
All right, Johnny, you've been in Vegas for, you said, about 40 years. You're a native New Yorker, so you don't have any stake in the game either as a fan. So where's your money going into Super Bowl 54?
Well, I think I mentioned just about a couple of minutes ago how bookmakers are not good predictors of the game. So what I do is I book the game. That's called, you know, just taking the money in and adjusting the line as needed, my team and I. And then when that is over and the game starts, it's out of my hands, Kevin, because no one has called me and said, Johnny, it's time to suit up. So until that happens, I'm a viewer like everyone else once the game starts.
Johnny Avello is the head of DraftKings Sportsbook Operation. Thanks for taking the time and enjoy the game since you're not suiting up.
Thank you, Kevin.
I'm Kevin Gavin. You're listening to The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. Saturday marks the start of the Lunar New Year, also known as Chinese New Year or Spring Festival, which celebrates the beginning of a new year on the traditional Chinese calendar. Here with us again this year is Marion Lien, president of the Organization of Chinese Americans in Pittsburgh. Marion, thank you for being here and Happy New Year to you.
Gong Xi Fa Cai. Kevin, I'm so pleased to be here with you. Happy, happy new year. We're all super excited to begin the year of the rat.
Well, before we begin the year of the rat, we're wrapping up the year of the golden earth pig. Are there any things that are still to be done to acknowledge the end of 1 year before we go into the new year?
Absolutely. So if we remember, the new year is one where we're going to sit back and enjoy family. So these are those few days, moments now where you want to get out there and get those tasks done, like making sure the kitchen is all cleaned up before the kitchen god comes swooping down to inspect the work, making sure you get your hair cut, tidying is out of the way, because once the new year begins, which will be the 25th, all of that has to be put aside because we don't want you to accidentally sweep away those good fortunes to come this year.
I would be remiss if I didn't ask you, how was your year of the golden earth pig?
It was momentous for me. I will be honest and tell you that personally, we saw a lot of changes in my family. And so I started a new job, and that was very fortuitous. So that was absolutely in the telling of my fortune. I also think that the Asian American community has experienced quite a bit of exponential growth. So we are really looking forward to the Census 2020 to have those accurate counts for us.
Do you just see it around, as you notice people or people coming to different events and say, boy, there are more folks coming to these events?
Absolutely. And I think that not only are they just coming to the events, but we're seeing visitors coming to Pittsburgh with Asian American backgrounds, as well as just those who are international visitors from Asia. So quite exciting for us right now.
All right. So what should we know about the year of the rat?
So the year of the rat, if you were born the year of the rat. So those of you remember, there are 12 animals in the Chinese astrology chart. So if you were born the year of the rat, these are times for you to think about challenges ahead for you. We are also understanding that there's lots of luck to be had about mid-year, so hang in there, and so that you're going to be able to reap those rewards. But to make sure that you also take care of your health, making sure that you have enough good sleep so that you have clarity of mind to tackle those challenges ahead.
But specifically the metal rat, what do we mean by that?
Well, so if you recall, the Chinese astrology with the 12 animals signified, you know, the year when the Jade Emperor asked all the animals to come join him, and he was going to name each year after the those who came in place for the race. Mm-hmm. On top of that, laid over for the Chinese the ideas of wood, metal, iron, water, and fire. So depending on which cycle that lands, you might be either the golden rat, mm-hmm. or it could very well be you're the fire rat.
Oh, okay. Now, last year, you told us the story of the Chinese zodiac and the Jade Emperor's race, which you've just mentioned. But I understand there's another myth involving the sea monster. Is it Nian?
That's right. So Nian, or as we Chinese would also say, is the word for year. Interestingly enough, and this is how the legend goes, well, Nian would come over to these villages once a year, and he would snatch up the little ones and other elderly villagers that weren't quick enough to get away. And so the villagers, when preparing for Nian's arrival every year, would run for the hills until one smart guy said, "You know what? I'm tired of running. We got to figure this out." And in fact, this is one reason why you see a lot of red that is worn on children, right? So in our mm-hmm. clothing, but it's also, you know, on lanterns, we see fortuitous Chinese characters that are written on the paper, couplets that are painted, you know, and then pasted on our doorways. All of that was because we figured out that that was what Nian was afraid of, the color red. But it's also, you know, he's afraid of loud noises.
Like firecrackers?
Firecrackers, for sure. But also, the lion dancers have figured out the rhythm and cadence of all of their drumming scares that Nian away.
So the actual festivities last 15 days from the first full moon of the year until the next. How will Pittsburgh families be celebrating during that time?
Oh, yes. There's these 2 weeks worth of fun. It starts with the Lunar New Year Day. And at St. Edmund's Academy this year in Squirrel Hill, we're so pleased to be able to welcome families, Asian, non-Asian, anyone who wants to have a little bit of fun with us. And it will be in a space where you're going to experience 4 straight hours of cultural live performances, as well as activities that highlight what, you know, in the traditions of China and all those that practice Chinese will be doing. There's also yummy, tasty treats.
I had to ask, what about food? We can't
Absolutely.
Have any. We can't have any festival without food.
That's for sure. And at this time, you know, New Year's Eve, I will tell you, is the most extraordinary time of travel for all of us because we're all headed home for the reunion dinner. So speaking of food, food for the Asians is just something akin to life, of course. Mm-hmm. And so we have symbolic foods like dumplings. Dumplings are shaped like gold ingots of yesteryear, so the more you eat, the richer you will be. It is also a word, jiaozi, which is sounds just like the word to connect. And so as family members get together, they're spending that precious time together and connecting the eve of the old year to the new.
So eating become richer, maybe a little heavier?
Well, you know, for a civilization that had faced so many famines, to just have a few extra pounds probably wasn't the worst thing to be thinking about. But it's also, we have lots of other things to eat on that festival day. We have longevity noodles or long life noodles. And then we also, I call this the American experience with Chinese characteristics. We might be having some pizza with some Chinese flavors like Kung Pao or maybe even some Sichuan thrown in there for good measure.
We're talking to Pittsburgher and scholar Marion Lien ahead of the Lunar New Year, which kicks off around the world this weekend. Marion, you mentioned travel. We'd be remiss if we didn't mention the deadly coronavirus currently plaguing parts of China. It was first identified in Wuhan, but that's since spread to more than 500 people, mostly in China, although it's been confirmed in the U.S. as well. Do you know, might the threat of the illness dampen any spirits or even travel plans for those in Pittsburgh?
Absolutely. What a scary thing to have to face, and our condolences to the families to have to face such a tragedy, especially this time of year. I think, though, that here in the Southwest Pennsylvania region, we have not had any cases. And so we're pretty confident that, you know, the festivities will go on. So it is an exciting time. I encourage everyone to come out. Not only can you experience this at St. Edmunds, but there are lots of other events around town.
Just like last year, the Squirrel Hill Urban Coalition will host celebrations, including a parade to close out the new year on February 9th. But what can we look forward to in the coming days?
Oh, there's so many to choose from. Over at Children's Museum on the eve before, so that's the 8th, not only is there a 12-course traditional Chinese banquet awaiting those who are attending that dinner, but also earlier in the day over at Museum Lab, we're so fortunate to have an Asian American artist by the name of Jordan Wong, who happens actually to be a native son of Pittsburgh. And his works of murals in the museum lab is just extraordinary, whimsical, also reflective of those changes that he has faced as an Asian American here. There are also other banquets around town. The Pittsburgh Restaurant, the Chinese Restaurant Association, is having theirs on the 2nd. And we know that that is for football fans out there. That's right.
Super Bowl and Lunar New Year, great combination.
That's right. So once you're finished watching the game, come on over. And the tickets are still selling for those. And that will be celebrated at about 8 o'clock starting. So you have lots of time to get there. For dinner, and that's over at Rivers Casino right there.
Marion, is there a list of all the festivities on a website?
Yes, and so we'd like to encourage you to come to the OCA, pghpa.org website. You're also welcome to look for these at the St. Edmunds Academy website.
And we will have a link to all the celebrations on our website, wesa.fm. Marion Lien is president of the Organization of Chinese Americans, the Pittsburgh chapter. Marion, thank you again and have a great holiday.
Thank you so much. 新年快乐. Bye-bye.
The World Health Organization is meeting again today to discuss whether the respiratory illness dubbed a coronavirus should be declared a global emergency. The outbreak's epicenter, the Chinese city of Wuhan, and other nearby cities are enforcing a partial lockdown to prevent further contamination. Authorities in Beijing have canceled all large-scale celebrations and parades, and face masks are now mandatory in parts of that nation. And for today, that is The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. Next time on The Confluence, it was created as a result of a sit-in at the University of Pittsburgh over a lack of programming for Black students. Now the Department of Africana Studies is marking 50 years of impacting students and the broader community. Join us for a conversation with anthropologist and chair Yolanda Covington Ward. If you missed anything from today's program or you'd like to catch up on past shows, please visit wesa.fm/confluence or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Today's program was engineered and produced by Kylie Kaczynski. Production assistance from Caldwell Holden, Caroline Burke, and Rosa Williamson-Ray. The editor and producer of The Confluence is Megan Harris.
I'm Kevin Gavin. Until next time, hope you have a good day of good news.